Okay, we're going to begin at the top of Nun Chedem and Aleph by the two dots. The Gemara is here continuing with the Gadato in regards to Korban Bayit Sheni. And here the Pasuk brings the Pasuk, Bnei Tzion Yikarim, people Tzion who are precious, Hamsulaim B'Pas, so that are adorned with gold or precious metals, Hamsulaim B'Pas. So Gemara wants to know, what does it mean, Hamsulaim B'Pas? That they were adorned with this precious metal or this gold. The Hamrei Tavei Rabbi Shilo, the Rabbi Shilo says, Tarte Matkale Yisire, Kiza Nachot Bialma. There were only two measures of this type of pizza, this precious metal or gold that came down to the world. One of them was given to Rome, and one given to the rest of the world. I mean, I don't know if you take it in a literal sense that that's the case, but rather that there was a limited amount of this precious item available, and therefore it would be impossible to suggest that the Jews of Tzion were adorned with this this precious metal. But rather the explanation here is that they used to, with the beauty of the Jews, they used to, I guess, embarrass or denigrate the beauty of the past. They were more beautiful than past. So in the beginning, the leaders or the noblemen of Rome, Abunakte Bilyona de Gushpanko, so we had this on the two dak ago, Bilyona de Gushpanko is the signet or the insignia that's on the ring. So they used to take a beautiful insignia and they used to put it in front of them when they were having Tashmish Amito, because they believed that that somehow affected the baby or gave it a more beautiful appearance. Once the Jews were available to them, then they had captured them during the conquest of Yerushalayim and they were sending the Jews into exile. Then Mighty Bnei Israel, the Asrei, they carried the Puraim. They used to take Jews and tie them, you know, slaves, tie them to the bedposts. And then look at them, meaning the beauty of the Jews would replace this Bilyona de Gushpanko. So one young child or person who was captured to do this said to his friend, where in the Pesukim do you see this, that such a punishment would come to the Jews? From Alei, Gam Kochlovi, Bechol Makka, Asher Lo Katu B'Sefer Torah Zot, right, so it says that even the punishment in the Tokacha, it says not only all that's written in the Sefer Torah, but even beyond what's written in the Sefer Torah will come to you. And obviously this is beyond what was even written in the Sefer Torah. So this young person, or the person who was chained up to the bed, says, how far away? You know, I didn't learn that yet. How far away am I from learning that? I'm learning, you're like a page and a half away. You're not very far away from learning it. I'm like, you might have got it. Had I gotten up to this pasuk, had I learned this, I wouldn't have needed you to explain it to me. I would have understood myself that this is, from the Tokka, this is a punishment beyond that which is written in the Torah. Samar Yehuda Amar Shmuel Mishmer Bishmuel Gomel Ma'ida Chatid Eni Olulah Nafshi Mikol Ben Odiri. My eyes, you know, were in woe for my nefesh because of what I saw happen to the daughters of my city. The city of Beitar, which we saw right yesterday, the Gadata regarding the tremendous destruction of Beitar and the size of Beitar. There were 400 shuls in Beitar. And each one had 400 teachers of children. And each teacher had 400 children learning. So Beit Rabban learning in front of them. Again, 400 generally is a term that's used through the Torah and through the Gemara as a Lashon Guzma, so I don't say this so I take it literally here, but I mean large numbers in general. Shayo Yev Nifnas Lisham, once the Romans invaded or conquered the city of Prima Domus Lutran, they used to pierce them with their stabs or their spears. Shigario Yev Alakdum, and at the point when they had successfully conquered the city, then they used to take Alakdum Karpum Sifrahim, used to wrap them up in their Sifre Torvi, Tidamesh, and burn them at the stake. Again, something very horrible destruction that took place during Bayit Sheni. And these are Ma'asib Rabbi Shua ben Hananya, Shabbat the Prach Kadosh for Rome, went to a large city in Rome, or the large city of Rome. They told him there was this young Jewish boy who was taken captive, was in a jail in there. Yabe Nayim, beautiful eyes, and Tobrowi, and a beautiful appearance. His appearance was so tough, he wrote Goto Kalim, he had curly, nice wavy hair. Halak Amara Petah Beit HaSulim, he went and stood in front of the jail where this child was incarcerated. Amar Mina Kamal Shisa Yaakov, Yisrael Gozazim. Right, who gave Yaakov to the those that tear apart, right? Yisrael Gozazim and the Yisrael to those that plunder. Ana Unum Ototino, that's the young child that was in the Beit HaSulim, answered, Amar, Alo Hashem Zucha Tanulo, isn't this because of Hashem, you know, Hashem that we sinned to? Lo Abu Drachav Haloch, and we did not stay in his way. Hello, Shamu Bitorato, and we didn't listen to his Torah. Amar Mutuchanibo, Shomareh, Aura Ab Yisrael. That this child for sure will be a leader, a posek in Klal Yisrael. Habudah, Shani Zazmi, Kanesh, Abdena, Bachum, Apon, Shapuskim, Allah. I will not leave here until I pay whatever sum of money they want in order to free me. Amru, Lozazmi Shamach, Shabadova, Mamun Harbe. He actually had to pay a large sum and redeemed him. But Oyu, Yamin, Mutim, Achaura, Harab Yisrael, was in a short time until this. A long time until this individual was a posek Yisrael man, and who was this young child? It was Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha. Right, Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha, who we're going to see in a second story about Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha's children, but he was a, seems like a Kohen Gadol and a Moreh Rav Yisrael. Tosfos over here mentions what he mentioned earlier in the Gemara when we talk about Pidyon Shvuyim. Over here we said that it can't be Polish Shvuyim, you'll tear me to date to me. So again, Tosfos brings the same thing that he brought over there, which is either Sakanas Lavashot, which is overripe, that, or that he knew that he was Muflag Bachachmati, because then now you can see that he tested him and saw that he was an unusual child. So here we go, Marab. Maisib Bibno Bitosh Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha. Right, this is a famous in Echara Bati, as the children of Rabbi Shmuel ben Elisha. Shenishbus Shnei Adonim, that were captured and taken captive by two owners. La Yamim Nizdavu Shnehem B'Makom Echad. So these two owners got together. Makom Echadel, may I have a change of your view of, I have this slave that is beautiful beyond. And I have the other ones, and I have a maidservant who is more beautiful than anybody seen. I'm a boat, and I see him, so let's, marry him off, and then we'll be able to profit from the children that they have. Right, they put them together in a room. Yashav Karenzavid Zeh. I'm sorry. Let's listen to that. Zeh Yashav Karenzavid Zeh. Mizu Yoshva Karenzavid Zeh. He sat in one corner. She sat in the other corner. Zeh Omeri Kohen Ben Kohanim Gedolim. I'm a Kohen, the son of Kohanim Gedolim. That's the this, right, Rabbi Shmuel Ben Elisha. And remember that Rabbi Shmuel Ben Elisha, when Rabbi Yoshua Ben Kohanim went to redeem him, was a beautiful child. Right, he was known to be a beautiful child. Here is children who are very beautiful. He says, "Ish asesh chan omer it mitzvah and zot ragani kohanim bat kohanim gedolim by a daughter of the kohanim gedolim and a set of heaven she married heaven bakul kolai they both cried all night image of amul shachar when the dawn broke he was at zed and realized they were brother and sister naflu zel zed the goat of kiyah they hugged and they fell and cried actually it's anish matan and that their other souls departed alem konin yirmiyah. These I cry, my eyes stream forth water or tears. Sorry, this massive be Isha Akat, Bitsapnat, but Niel Shmat. It was a case with a woman, and her name was Bitsapnat, but what's her name? Tsapnat, Shakotokim, Yelpia, she was so beautiful, everybody looked at her. But Niel, Bitol Shel Kanoin Gadol. Shishimesh Lepnan, she was the daughter of the Kohen Gadol, that was Niel means Pnei Kel, meaning that they went in to see the Pekarch Barakum. She named Alhol Ba, Shavai Kolai. So her captor, mistreated her, was engaged her all night. Makar Bisha Shiva Halukim, the next morning he dressed her up in seven pieces of clothing, or seven layers of clothing. Yotila Makra, he took her out to sell her. Bhagavan Khajan Arbi Uter, brought one guy who was horrible looking, ugly beyond belief. I'm like, any Ethiopia, show me her beauty before I buy her. I'm like, Rika, my time was like, this guy says, don't ask questions. If you want to buy, buy. Jane Ethiopia, there's no one more beautiful than her. I'm like, Apophi Kane, he says, nevertheless, I want to see her. If she does, Shisha Kalukim, he removes six layers or six pieces of clothing from her. Ushvi'i, and the seventh one, Karatak, she tore. Right? They did Palsapa Adrian. She rolled in the dirt or rolled in the ashes, and either to cover herself up because she had nothing to wear anymore, or because of that simon of it, is to rip the clothing and to roll in the Adrian. You don't have any rachamim, at least on your shame. You know, there shouldn't be a chilul Hashem. You should have some rachamim. This is what Yirmiyahu says, or gives a kina. Batami chigrisak, right? The daughters of my nation, chigrisak, wear sackcloth, be kalsibi afar, enroll in the dirt to braver. About evil yachida silach, right? Make just for yourself an individual avilut. Misay tamruim. Because suddenly the enemy or the captor will come upon us. So what's the play here? The play on the word here is aleinu. Alech amonem. I didn't say on you or alayim, right, in the female sense. Ela aleinu, meaning on us. Was us? Behold, alayim, alayim. Both on me and you. Meaning that Kadosh Baruch Hu senses the gullus and the pain that's going on and is actually affected by that which happened to the Jews, that his shame is being mitchalel. That's a line of laugh, but the captors come upon me and you. And that there's a tremendous chilul Hashem in these destructions of the Jews and the destruction of the Mikdash, which is actually a recurring theme in the keynotes. You look at the keynote that there is a tremendous chilul Hashem that takes place at the time of the destruction of the Korban and the loss of the, right, the grandeur of a Kodesh Baruch Hu from the Olam. Right, so next, I'm going to read them. My Nechatid, Vashku Geber Beito, Be'ish Benachlato, that they will take away or steal, rob, right, a person in his house and a man in his possessions. It's a master of the Odom Achrad, Shinatone Nam Bished Beishet Rabo. Right, he wanted to marry or take the wife of his master. Master being here not until Rab, but master in terms of a apprenticeship. Right, so Vashuyu the Nagre Habon, he was a carpenter. Right, so he was a master carpenter, and he was the student wanted to get to the master's wife. The master required to borrow money. Right, so he says, well, I'll lend you the money, but just leave your wife as collateral with me. She stayed there for 3 days. So then he went and came to him. The master came back to him after 3 days. Where's my wife that I gave to his father? I let her go right away. And I heard the rumor that she goes in Zaluba. That she was right. What? Oh, Badera. Thank you. That she goes in Zaluba Badera. That she was. She got involved with young children on the way, right? And very negative, obviously a very negative rumor about her. So the master says to the student, what should I do? Listen to my advice, you're shot, divorce her. She has a tremendous tuba, I can't just divorce her. Don't worry, I'll lend you the money for this, and you will pay her super. How much of a gear shop? So again, the master went ahead and divorced his wife. And the apprentice, because you know what he did, of course, is he went ahead and he married her. Then the time came to pay back this, you know, apprentice, the money that he borrowed to pay the ksuba, but he didn't have any money to pay him back. Come and work for me in order to repay your loan. So the apprentice and the master's ex-wife were sitting there eating. We all made a much feel them, and he was servicing them and serving them. The tears were flowing from his eyes, and afloat because they hadn't fallen in their cups. At that time, the Zardin of the Korban was, you know, sealed in the fate of the Korban sealed. Ramilah Shvik Tilot Ben Erechad. But not on this, but on Eshadish, the Isser of Eshadish, which was what caused the Korban. But at least this type of behavior, right, which was inappropriate, meaning not, in quote unquote, meaning that Din was inappropriate, but it was clear that this person was misleading in order to take advantage of another person. And because of that, right, this is the Ben Adam, the Chavero, that was lacking at the time of the Bayim Sheni, that they didn't treat each other properly, but that would cause or led to the Chetum of the Gzar Din, right, the sealing of the Gzar Din of the Churban HaBayit. Okay, now that's the end of the Gadatah with Bayim Sheni. Now we're back to our Mishnah. If you remember in our Mishnah, it says that he buys from the secret loan. The secret loan, again, was someone who took property for an exchange for not killing the person, right? So we said over there that works because the person's miyayish from the property. Why is he miyayish from the property? Because he knows that his life's in danger. His life's in danger, he's going to give the property with his full name in order to save his life. Now, the Mishnah says that if he first buys it from the secret owner, then he buys it from the Baal, that's not a valid sale. Because we say the reason that the Baal sold it to him is either because, no, I'd rather put it in with you, or because he was afraid of the secret owner, he didn't sell it. Whereas if he buys it from the Baal first, and then the secret owner, then there's no, right, then the sale is a good sale. So on that issue, that it's not a good sale when the Baal, when the owner sells it after the secret owner, that Amarav, Goshanu, El Garmel, Halef, Hazek, Bikni, that's only if he makes an oral transaction with him. He says, go ahead and take possession of it, and he sells it to him. About the shtar, but if he does it with a document, and then he actually signs the shtar, then the person is called in, because the Baal didn't have to go, the owner didn't have to go so as far as to sign a contract. He could have sold it to him on an oral transaction. In fact, he went through a contract, shows you that he was selling it with his full lathe. Shmuel Amar, after shtar, now he will come up, and even when the shtar is not called in, actually, still low achrayut, until he specifically says that I give recourse. I'm going to not only am I selling it to you, but you have recourse against me if the land gets taken away. So in that case, it's the sale is final because, what, again, he didn't have to go so far. Why did he go so far to sell it with Akwayu? I mean, simply he wanted to go to dinner with this other person. Or he was afraid of secret going, he could have done much less. The fact that he went to such an extreme and made it into an official and final sale in that way, that means that he's already really selling it. So Tanya Kavasi to Shmuel and the Brace that supports the position of Shmuel and Shimon Elazar Amir, the Hakmanisha. So this is true. If you remember the Mishnah, the din of the Mishnah applied both to a secret home and to a woman. A woman whose husband sold property, either property that was designated for a suba or property that she brought in her dowry. If she sells, agrees to the sale afterwards, it's not considered a valid sale. Whereas if she sold it first and then the Baal sells it, then it is a valid sale. So now we have a price that sounds like Shmuel. Shimon Elazar Amar Lakachmanisha, Hazer Lakachmanisha, you buy from the woman first and then the man, Mechol Kayam, it's a good sale. Minaish, but if you buy from the man, the Hazer Lakachmanisha, then buy from the woman, Mechol Batel, it's not a good sale because we say, I said to the Bali, I wanted to make my husband happy, not because I really wanted to sell it. Actually, Tichtov lo Achrayut, until he writes, in the, if she writes Achrayut, recourse in the document, then it's a final sale, and that is what exactly what Shmuel said, that Achrayut are the determining factor whether we say that this person can make a claim, or no Achrayut, that I will go to dinner with you, or I was afraid of the secret bone, versus it being a real sale, and Achrayut, and here the Brisa says the same thing. So Gemara says, name it time to you through the Rab. Why don't we say this is a massive question on Rab? It's a Brisa, right? It's going against Rab's position. So I'm going to call Rab. Rab can explain the Brisa. My Achrayut, na mishtar. When we say Achrayut, we don't always mean Achrayut meaning recourse, but rather through a shtar, because a shtar, right, generally has Achrayut. So it doesn't mean literally that he sold it with recourse, but rather he sold it with a shtar rather than with Alpeh. Because then you can be Gobe, and plus when she was in, there are other reasons Shtar has more token or more power to be Gobe from it. There is a suggestion, you know, I read the Gemara in the simple way, there is a suggestion in Tosfos that the Machlokas of Rav and Shmuel here relates to the Machlokas, right, in the Gemara, in another place, which is that Rav and Shmuel argue whether when you have a Shtar that does not have Achrayut, it does not have recourse in it, is that held so far or not held so far? Was that together in Shibos? Right, is that considered the author or the writer of the shtar make a mistake and is automatically assumed to be Achrayut in the shtar? Or do we say no? So Rav believes that when the right, when the shtar is written and there is Achrayut in it, it's a child so fair. Therefore Rav says over here that the shtar comes, that whenever you write the shtar, it's the equivalent of having Achrayut. And Shmuel says a shtar is not sufficient, because Shmuel said that there's a missing Achrayut, that's not a child so fair, and therefore the Achrayut missing means that it's just the shtar, no Achrayut, and therefore Shmuel says you must require Achrayut in this case. That's a Tosfos brings down from a shito that learns that our Gemara is from Rav Elazar Mishanzo. That's the explanation over here, whether Achrayut is told sofer or not. It's just an alternative. It does, right? It just, well, it also helps answer Rav Tosfos as a steer from the Gemara and Subos, that over there it says if a woman signs the document, then it would be sufficient. I mean, if she signed on it, that would create a finality of the sale. And the question is, how our Gemara says no. It does have to differentiate. So if, according to our Gemara, he differentiates between, right, that when she signs on a document of her vow, there it doesn't work. Whereas over here, when she writes the actual document, then it does work. Meaning that keeping the shtar. If she goes as far as to write the shtar itself, that makes it into a final sale. But if she simply signs, that's not enough. But based on Magos Mishansen's explanation, we can explain the difference, is that our case over here is where she was Makabal Aprayut, and the case over there was where she wasn't Makabal. She had no recourse, and that's the difference in the case. So this brings it down, because that explanation does fit well in our Gemara. All right, now, Tan Rabbanan. Lakach min ha-sikrikon, ba'akwas goshanim b'tnei bali. He buys it from this secret bone, and then he eats for 3 years with the balim, the knowledge of the balim. Then he goes and sells it to another party. So you have Shimon, it's Reuben's property. Right? Reuben was then taken, exchanged that property to save his life to the secret bone. Shimon goes and buys the property from the secret bone. He eats, he uses this land for 3 years, and Reuben knows about it. Then Shimon sells it to Levi. Right, so now the Mishnah says, in the Baal HaMa'ol Kach Sheni Klon, these original owners, Reuben, can't go and make any claim against Levi. So Mar says, hey, what's the case? Ike, Tayin Bamar Minach Zabno. Right, he says, that the what's the claim of Levi? If Levi says, Shimon bought it for you, Abiel Roshon Nami, then Shimon should be able to make the same claim, right? He says he bought it from Reuben, then Shimon can make the same claim, and Reuben should have no question about it. Ike, Tayin, if he doesn't make any claim like that, Mar Minach Zabno, Abiel Sheni Nami. Then even the lady, what right does Levi have to say on this property if Shimon never bought it from Reuben? So I'm going to say, it's a case where he's not towing. In this case, we make the claim on behalf of a Yoresh or on behalf of a buyer. So even though the buyer doesn't know to make such a claim, we make it on his behalf. Right? The Edom, well, what about the first buyer? What about Shimon? How come we don't make a title for him? Itayin in Elotayin Mo. If he makes the claim, he makes it, but we don't do it on his behalf. Why? So Rashi explains what's the difference. But the first buyer, Shimon, knows for certain whether he bought it from Reuben or not. So if he's going to come and Reuben's making has a question about Shimon's ownership, Shimon should say, I bought it from you, because he knows for certain. Levi doesn't have the ability to make such a claim, a bargain claim that Shimon bought it from Reuben, because he never knows if Shimon bought it from Reuben. So therefore, we make the claim on his behalf. Why do we make the claim on his behalf? Because in this case, we assume that the stam, the underlying chazaka is that one who buys from the secret account, right, knows that he won't throw his money away, and therefore he only does it with the acquiescence of the Baal. I mean, that person's not going to buy from this marauder or this robber and buy the property with the knowledge that the original owner will come and take it back from him. So that fact makes it so that we assume, and then we make such a claim on behalf of any buyer, a second tier buyer, to say he definitely bought it from the original owners. Right? Rashi over here says, Rashi says, even according to the one who says in general, we're not towing for a Yorish, we're towing for a Lokaf, would agree over here that we are towing. Tosso says that that's not the case, because there is nobody who argues about this, but rather, Kugonzeh means, even in this case, we would think, right, that the reason that the owners did not object to the whole process until now is because they were afraid of the marauder. Nevertheless, we see over here that we say, no, he waited 3 years, he allowed another sale to go, he's lost his rights to make any claim on his property. So this situation of sikrikon in our Mishnah, where a party is allowed to buy the property and keep it, that we say there's yevish habalim, that only applies where the property was given in exchange for his wife. But if the property was given in exchange for a loan, or was given either a made-up loan or was stolen from him, in that instance, we don't say that there's this din of sikrikon, and you can't go and assume that the balim had yevish. The ankrut atmat shrikosh shahaya shemas akotosh, and the ankrut itself, this robbery has to wait at least 12 months. Somebody says, what do you mean it has to wait 12 months? Our heart, you got some secret gone. You just said there's no din of taking away. What do you mean waiting 12 months? How come you're Sikrikon atzmat shrikosh deyesh yevish kotzeh. Even sikrikon has to wait 12 months. In the first 12 months, you can't buy it because we assume that the bottom haven't had yevish yet in the first 12 months. Only after the first 12 months, we assume they have a complete yevish. If they haven't made a claim by then, they're not going to make any claim. So if the property is given in exchange for their life, then we assume that he had yevish after 12 months. Before 12 months, no. If the property is not given in exchange for his life, we assume that he never had yevish because he thinks he's going to get the property back. He's going to go to the government officials, he's going to go to whoever the ruler is and get his property back. There is no such thing as this robbery in Babel. Where it says that, because he didn't ego. What do you mean there's no robbery in Babel? We see people all the time taking property from the Jews without any permission. What do you think? There's no din of this robbery in Babel. My time. Beit Bar, which means some sort of court, a ruling system, there's some sort of court system, lo atim, and this person doesn't go to make a claim in the court system, kabel, right? Then he accepts this, as a kabel, doesn't go make a complaint, emakul yachal. You assume that he was mokel on the property. So what's the position? Why do we say by a robbery, that in verses where it's taken in exchange of his life, we say that you cannot buy the property? It's because the Baal didn't have yesh. But when Baal have a vehicle or process by which they can make the claim on the property and take the property back, right, then we say if they don't take advantage of that, then they are yesh. Because if they had thought that they were going to take the property back, they should have gone to court and said something. In fact, they did, it means that they're both aligned. If someone buys the property afterwards, then it's considered a good sale. Now, Gidol Bar Eli, so there's this case, this guy Gidol Bar Eli, Kabel Arba Lukaskel. He used to be a representative, meaning that there used to be large tracts of land. And in order to farm the land, you have to pay a tax to the government. If you didn't pay the real estate tax, you weren't allowed to work the land. Whoever paid the real estate tax, worked the land. So Gidol Bar Eli was basically he was the representative of a large group of farmers. And those farmers would pay the tax up to him, and then he would pay it to the government. So B'nai Ba'ago, so the people of the valley, so what happens is if someone didn't pay the taxes, he would go, that person, what they would do is they'd redivide the land and all the remaining people, so you had, say, three farmers or four farmers that were working the field, and then when they paid the taxes, all four of them paid taxes, and then they worked the field. What happens if one of them leaves? Now there are only three farmers left in the field. What they used to do is redivide the tax among the three, they'd give that money to the representative, and then they would work the entire land. The three would now divide the whole land instead of four. The other guy would be out. So this is what happened here. A guy leaves, and they pay taxes on his behalf to work the land. Now what happened? This Gidol Bar Eli, not only did he pay taxes for 1 year, he prepaid taxes for the next 3 years. Once this owner went away, he prepaid the taxes and he wanted to take possession of the property for the next 3 years. So now they come.
So it's a little differently than if one landowner could go in and they would give another person the right to that person as long as he paid that person's taxes. And give up our.
You like what was that? The representative of the others, but right. The same concept that someone takes possession of the property, they pay taxes. Here, somebody prepaid the taxes. So now they come back. The owners come back, and what do they say? So they go, the original owner comes back, fine, you paid for the taxes this year, you can eat it. Hashkan and the idea, we're now back, we're going to pay the taxes again, and we want to start eating again. I mean, we want to get our property back. So after the commanding of Rapapa, so they brought the day before Rapapa, Sarah the Mikta lay tearful up in a Bago. He wanted to give a Torah, I mean, he wanted to give a sack din to either this Gidol Bar Eli or the people of the valley, that they should be able to what? That they should be able to keep the property. They pay the taxes, they keep the property. So he should be able to keep. What right do they have to come back here and make the claim? So I'm like Rabbuna Braid from Yeshua, the Rapapa, so Rabbuna Braid Yeshua says Rapapa, and can't see the secret gone. That's a din of a sacred bone. What's a din of a sacred bone? That the Baal had Yeush. When the Baal had Yeush, when you buy it, it becomes your property fully. So you're creating the same situation over here. You're creating a situation where these people left, they didn't pay their taxes for 1 year, right? And now you're giving the property full sale to these other people. And we said before that when it comes to robbery or theft and so on, that there is no, if there's no life endangerment, that the Baal don't give up rights to the land. And over here, there's no life endangerment. All it was a tax that was paid to the government. So he says, this person lost their money because they shouldn't have prepaid the taxes. They should pay year by year. The fact that he prepaid for the other 2 years is his problem. He didn't have rights to buy the property. Since he didn't have rights, he's slipping through his money to the wind, and he's not entitled to keep the property. All right, the Zoom Mishnah Rishona. So we go back to our Mishnah, right? Our Mishnah says this was the Mishnah Rishona, that they used to redeem the property, and then if the Baal wanted it, then they could buy it. The Basin Chakrim, the Basin afterwards saw that what happened, nobody was redeeming the property. So if you bought the property, the Baal would always take them away from you, and you would lose, you'd lose that. So they didn't redeem the property. So they saw that the properties were staying with these products. So what did they do? They made a new din. That a person who buys from the secret bone, he gets a discount, he gets some pay 75% of market, and he would give the other 25% to the Baal. The problem was that people were still not doing it. Why? Because the Baal could still come and buy it back from them. So what they made a deal that within the first 12 months, the Baal had first right of refusal, they could buy it. After 12 months, whoever bought it got to keep it, and they paid the 25% to the Baal. So That was a way to preserve or to make sure that the properties didn't stay with these people as long as they came back. Now, this Rabia that you pay, what is the story of this Rabia? Amarav, Rabia Makarka, Rabia Bimalot. Rav says that Rabia Makarka, Rabia Bimalot. Shmuel Amar, Rabia Makarka, Shem Shlish Bimalot. So you do Rabia Makarka, that's a third of the Maot. So my conflict is, okay, what's the Makogos here? I'll go back and explain this in 1 second. This is going to understand Makogos. Makogos is Marsar and Akin Riva via Zion Javin. First, Rav believes that they sold it at a discount by a quarter. Marsar and Akin Khunshas of it. And one of them holds that they sold it at a discount of a fifth. So what does that mean? So if you look in Rashi, this is good. Rashi explains this very well. Look at Rashi. I'm a Rav, Reviva, Karka, Reviva, Mos. It's Rashi. I'm a Reviva, Karka, Reviva, Mos. Or he can the Baal and Reviva, Mos. Or he pays him a quarter of the money. Shnatan lo tekum kamin. Or they pay him a quarter. So first of all, he paid 500 shekel for the property. If he paid 400 shekel for the property, he gets one quarter of that amount, which means an additional 100 shekel he would get. It means that the true value of the property is 500. He paid 400 for it. So he pays a quarter of what he paid to the Oh, he can no karka shove a revia hamaot. Right, it's property that's equivalent to one quarter of the money. What's the property that's equivalent to one quarter of the money? I mean, not from the money. No, ten lo revia hamaot. So if he bought it for 100, he gives him 25, right? If he bought it for 100, he gives him 25 bits of money. Oh, may a karka no shove a revia money. But for the property, he would give him the equivalent of 25. What's the equivalent of 25? The only come sheet of the karka is 1/5 of the property, right? Because he's selling the property at a discount, which is that he's selling the 500, a property worth 500 for 400. So when he pays him a quarter of the money, he gets the full value. If he pays him 100 shekel, he gets the 500. But if he takes the property and hands him a piece of property, how much property does he have to get to that 100? He only has to give him 1/5 of the property. The property's really worth 500 to get to the 100.
It's like this is the market margin.
Right, exactly.
The size of the point.
Exactly. It's kind of a barren of the gap, which you see makes sense in the Gemara. When you do a percentage, are you doing the percentage, right? Based on, is it the markup or is it the discount to the property? It's exactly here. So that's Rob's position. That's the summer Rob. Okay, Khosha's other man of the club. He buys it at a fifth discount, right? He has 500 to 500, he buys it at 400. Right, so now, if you skip down my line, again, my bank says, with Shmuel Amar, Rabia Karkasma, Tanlo, Oshlish Mana. He either gives him a quarter of the property or 1/3 of the amount. Why? The summer Shmuel, the King Rivas of it, Shavar, but Lakhon Kushlosh. Property's really worth, right, 400, and he's buying it at 300, meaning he's buying it at a 25% discount. Right, Rob thinks he's buying it at a 20% discount, and Rabia Shmuel thinks he's buying it at a 25% discount. So instead of 400, he pays 300. So either he pays him what? 1/3 of the money, which is 100, right? Or he pays him a quarter of the property, right? Or the property also be equivalent to 100. So that's their makhluk, is whether the discount is 20% or 25%. And again, what is the quarter? Is the quarter a discount to the property, or is it the amount that you would need to add to get the full price of the property? Okay? So now, So this is a price that's like our Mishnah. The Mishnah Rishon Vezin Shafrein Amro Elokeh Mishnah Natan Labalim Rabia gives a quarter to the Balim Biyad Balim Alayom Na. And the Balim have the choice. They can claim it in property or in money. Game attack. It's my shame. That's when the owners don't have the ability to buy it. But if you don't need that, ain't put me in the hood up. They have the first right of refusal. Rabbi Hoshi Bezin, this is the third Tafana, which is that it's already 12 months, then the Balim no longer have this first right of refusal. So who does that sound like? That sounds like Ra, Rabia Batarka, Rabia Bimos. So I'm Ravashi, Kitanya Hai, the Akrish Bo Moti Adult. No, what is the Rabia Bimos? We can explain like Shmuel. Rabia Bimos means that it's 1/4 of the total. If you take like Shmuel, if he bought the property, it was a 400 property that he bought for 300, right? After he gives 300 to the Ovi Kahavan plus the 100 to the Baal, then what's that? That's a quarter. The quarter of the money is what he's paying. It's a quarter of the total amount of money that he's going to pay over here. So it's not a quarter, again, of the discount, but a quarter of the money that he used, right, of the payment here. So he says, all right, we'll stop over here. The next part continues into the mission tomorrow. Let's go.